fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51, we look at the decision by President Barack Obama to close the prison camp at Guantanamo Bay, a decision announced in his first days in office, praised by civil libertarians and many of his liberal supporters, and attacked by conservative commentators and others who have supported the actions taken by President Bush following the September 11th attacks. Today, you're going to hear some reaction to the decision to close Guantanamo from former Vice President Dick Cheney, from Christine Bremer Moogley, an Obama supporter who heads Wisconsin's top organization of trial lawyers, and also from Liz Bradley, a woman who grew up in Wausau, who is now working for the Center for Constitutional Rights, an organization that provides legal representation to the inmates of Guantanamo. And we welcome back to Route 51 Staff Sergeant Brian Jopek of the Army National Guard for his third appearance on this program. Sergeant Jopek spoke to us previously about his work running an armed forces radio station in Mosul, Iraq, and then tragically about the loss of his beloved son Ryan to a roadside bomb in that country. Sergeant Jopek is now an officer, a public affairs non-commissioned officer at Guantanamo Bay, and he is back home in central Wisconsin for just a few days before returning there. He is here to give us an insider's look. We also want your questions and comments. We are taking your phone calls at 261-6371. That's 261-6371, or toll free at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Brian, welcome back to Route 51. Thanks for being here.
Glenn. I don't know if I'll be able to follow up the Pomerania Mania thing you had last week.
Oh, that was exciting.
I'll give it a shot.
That was exciting. You know, we had these guys on reading the weather forecast in Pomerania, and we actually did learn quite a bit by having them on about our heritage. And it's an example of the wide range of topics that we cover on this radio show.
Gotta love live radio.
But back to the topic at hand. You know, the last time we had you on, we ended up becoming kind of a national sensation because of the decision the president had made to wear Ryan, your son Ryan's military bracelet, and I was just showing you a picture. He is apparently still wearing it at the inauguration.
Yes, he then presidential candidate Obama had, after the presidential debate where the bracelets became kind of a media thing, ended up on like Hannity and Combs and Inside Edition and the New York Post.
And the Chicago Tribune.
I mean, all over the place. He had called Ryan's mother, my ex-wife, and apologized to her for all of the brouhaha. And he did tell her that he would like to continue to wear the KIA bracelet that she had given him at the Green Bay appearance back in February that he made, the campaign appearance. And he is indeed still wearing the bracelet.
We had a picture of him at the inauguration, and the bracelet is there. And what we're going to try to do this time, Brian, is keep this away from the bloggers.
I was going to say, can we stay off the blogs as much as possible?
And, you know, it was disheartening to me to see all of these left-wing bloggers attacking your ex-wife, Tracy, all these right-wing bloggers attacking you. I was getting it from both sides, and none of them knew either of you or knew of Ryan or knew of what he meant to the both of you, meant to the community that he grew up in Merrill, meant to all of us in Wisconsin. And you have these blogs, and people can say anything. They can make any opinion known, no matter how vile, and they don't have to sign their names, which to me is cowardly.
Right.
You know, when you write a letter to the letter to the editor column,
you have to sign
your name. They call you up. They make sure you're the same person. Maybe we ought to have the same rules for blogs.
That would be cool because I guess one of the things that gets me is that people do that. Then Christmas time rolls around, and it's all Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. And then after the New Year, it's back to the same old stuff. I mean, it's like, I don't know. Some of that stuff was just really crass and garbage.
And again, from people who were uninformed and didn't know anything about what was really going on with the situation. So I don't know if we're going to change that today. let's turn to the subject at hand. How did you end up at the public relations or the public affairs office at Guantanamo?
Well, my unit in the Guard, the Wisconsin Guard unit, is the 112th Mobile Public Affairs Detachment. We're based out of Madison. And our number came up for deployment. And it was either going to be Southwest Asia or Guantanamo Bay. And the state had the ability from what I understand from Guard Bureau in Washington to pick either one, and they picked Guantanamo Bay to send us to Guantanamo Bay. So my unit is assigned to Joint Task Force Guantanamo Public Affairs. We are the public affairs entity for Joint Task Force Guantanamo.
So what does that mean? What do you actually do there?
Well, trying to sum this up, we're broken down into three sections. We have the media relations section. Those people deal with the media that comes in, whether it's has been for commissions or camp tours. They actually do media tours of the camps. And our people in that section deal with those media individuals.
And incidentally, Wisconsin Public Radio's own Gil Halstead has been at Gitmo this past week, and he will be filing some reports. We tried to hook up with him, but apparently his plane's been delayed, or for one reason or another, I wasn't able to get a cell phone connection to
him. But he will deal with our media relations people at some point down there at Gitmo. My section is the public information section. Photographers, take care of the distinguished visitor tours, people that come in to tour the camps, whether it be important military higher-ups, three-star generals, four-star generals from elsewhere, senators, whomever, two entertainers that come down to the MWR program. Our staff photographers in my section take those pictures. We also do, I've got a NCO who handles the website, the JTF website. He's the webmaster, one of my non-commissioned officers.
In a sense, this is an extension of what you were doing when you were running the Armed Forces radio
station. I've been able to get one story out to that ran on Soldiers Radio last year. Because of my current job, a section sergeant, I don't really get a chance to do what I did in Iraq as far as produce news stories, radio stories, video stories, that sort of thing. But I have been able to, unlike Iraq, where that radio station we had there actually was a pirate radio station, I have hosted a Saturday morning, every Saturday morning, a classic rock show for 3 hours on Radio Gitmo. Naval station, naval base radio station down there.
And who can pick that up?
Nobody, unless we record it. And now we do have one of a couple.
So,
of
you're not
people.
Actually broadcasting?
No, well, no, we do down there. Sure, yeah, it's we're broadcasting to Cuba.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So they can pick you up in Cuba.
Sure. Yeah. It's 103.1, 102.1, and AM 1340. The AM side is all talk radio. But like I say, my show is 3 hours of classic rock. And there's a show that comes on after ours. Two of our people do an alternative rock show for 3 hours. Now, those two young ladies have been trying to develop ways to do a podcast. I don't know what the status of that is. I don't know if you can actually hear some of what they've been doing on the JTF website. And I don't have the address for the JTF website. People can get on there. I mean, it's a public website.
But you're doing that, and you're also filing stories in the process of filing some stories?
I'd like to be able to do that. Like I said, unfortunately, because of the position I'm in on this deployment, I'm a squad leader or section sergeant. Just the other duties involved, whether it be administrative or personnel or whatever, I don't really haven't had a lot of time to work on doing the kind of stories that I did in Iraq.
Brian, what's the first impression you have of the place as you get off a plane?
I want to go home. No. The water is great. I mean, and then when you get to work, that first day at work, and you're looking out over the ocean.
Yeah.
You're thinking, wow, I'm going to be doing this for the next year. Come to work and there's the, Atlantic or depending on what side of the island you're on, the Caribbean.
But the prison camp is not Club Gitmo. It is not a resort.
No. Oh, no, not. It's not, but it's also, I mean, I can tell you that, I mean, the Bush administration has admitted there was some, you know, some stuff that went on, and I don't know all the details, all that stuff, so I'm not going to sit here and speculate as to what happened. But it's public knowledge that the Bush administration did acknowledge that there was some hanky-panky going on early on. I can guarantee you that none of that's been going on for the last several years. Our people are doing everything they can. They're bending over backwards to make sure the detainees don't hurt themselves and don't hurt our people. Those are the two primary goals of the current not only the current administration down there, but the previous ones as well.
We're going to get into this in more detail in just a minute. I'm going to take a break right now, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Staff Sergeant Brian Jopek, who is working for the Public Affairs Office at the prison camp at Guantanamo Bay. If you'd like to join the conversation, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51, Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include attorney Paul A. Sturgill, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Toll-free information is at 888-613-0600.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
Our guest today on Route 51, Staff Sergeant Brian Jopek, who is with the Public Affairs Office at the prison camp in Guantanamo Bay. We're going to play a couple of things. We're going to play a clip from President Barack Obama's inaugural address, in which he laid forth the reasoning behind his decision to close Guantanamo, and then some comments that were made on a program on Route 51 a couple of weeks ago by Christine Bremer Moogley, who is the president of the Wisconsin Association of Justice, the state's organization of trial lawyers.
As for our common defense, we reject as false the choice between our safety and our ideals. Our founding fathers, faced with perils that we can scarcely imagine, drafted a charter to assure the rule of law and the rights of man, a charter expanded by the blood of generations. Those ideals still light the world, and we will not give them up for expedience's sake.
I think that for me, it was one of the most significant things he said, this line that we reject as false, the choice between our safety and our ideals, is a line that just reverberates in me. I mean, the right, when he talked about our founding fathers and the fear and what they had to face, and yet into our Constitution is written the right to habeas corpus, the right to have charges brought forward so you cannot be detained without due process, is right in our Constitution. It's the only right that's actually in the body of our Constitution. And yet the 43rd President, President Bush, repudiated that right. And, you know, I think that when we have as our leader now a man that values this and who really gets it, who is a constitutional lawyer, but to say no more will we hold people without trial, this is crucial to our safety and to our Constitution and to our future.
How do you reply to the critics who say that this is a very dangerous world we live in, these ideals are all well and good, but what we did wasn't really all that bad in terms of the way we interrogated these people? It's a tough world out there, and the safety of America has to be paramount.
I think Obama answered that in his speech when he said what the forefathers faced was unimaginable terrors, with fighting in the peaceful valleys of our colonies. And I think that we haven't faced that. And yet, despite those fears, the right to habeas corpus was not acknowledged by our forefathers. And so to those who say that we have to take away this crucial right from the people that we engage, they're just plain wrong. If we're going to believe in our Constitution, and that has been the strength of this country, then we have to also believe in this right to habeas corpus, and Obama is bringing us back to that, and that is crucial.
That's Christine Bremer-Moogley of the Wisconsin Association for Justice. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guest today, Staff Sergeant Brian Jopek, who is with the Public Affairs Department at Guantanamo Bay. Brian, you were saying that there was no hanky-panky at the prison camp within the past few years.
Mm-hmm.
What a lot of critics, like Christine Bremer-Moogley, is saying is that the very fact that that camp exists in the first place and we are detaining people indefinitely without the right of habeas corpus, that's bad enough.
Yeah. I really don't, I really don't know what to say to that. I mean, aside from, I guess, from a strictly a soldier standpoint, if you have individuals who could potentially cause harm to you, your unit or whatever, you need to get the information from them. Now, how you go about doing that, I'm not going to sit here and say I agree with everything that went on or whatever, or that we've been hanging on to these guys for too long. I'm not here to
some of them
that.
Have been there for 7 years without even being charged with a crime.
Well,
and we're going to end up letting some of them go after 7 years.
Right, and some of them has just been a matter of we haven't been able to find a place for them. A lot of countries, whether it was a political thing, whether they didn't want to work with the Bush administration or whatever, I don't know. I mean, that's well above my pay grade. Didn't want to take any of these guys. Yeah, they were critical of what was going on, what the U.S. was doing by holding them there at Gitmo. But when it came down to would they take any of them, the answer most of the time was no. We don't want them because they're bad guys.
When you label these people as being the worst of the worst, and then you hold them there for year after year, the reputation is going to be tainted, sure, needless to say, by the time they're finally released.
Right.
And how many have we charged out of the 779 inmates? I think that's the total that
originally
gone through there. We've charged 20 people
something
after
like
7 years?
Yeah, something like that. I really don't know what to tell you on that.
And again, to people like Christine, who is a student of constitutional law,
mm-hmm,
the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, means everything to her.
Sure.
Guess you can say they're enemy combatants. This doesn't apply to them. She would argue that it applies to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that the right of habeas corpus is so fundamental, it goes all the way back to medieval English law. Back in the year 1000,
I think
it was, when they finally forced the king to sign the Magna Carta.
And some of those detainees have been found to be not, U.S. courts have said that we don't really have any legal reason to hold them. Like the Uyghurs, for example, the Chinese Muslims. The problem is, where do you put them? Where do you take them?
Now, the Uyghurs, give us some background on that. These are ethnic Chinese Muslims who moved to, was it Afghanistan?
Afghanistan, correct.
In order to escape persecution in their homeland.
Yes.
And they got rounded up somehow with the whole sweep and thrown into Guantanamo. They're not terrorists. They pose no security threat to anybody.
According to U.S. courts, they've basically, I guess you could say, they've been cleared as far as those U.S. courts are concerned. So now they're sitting down there in Guantanamo, the legal system has been trying to find the Bush administration initially, and now the Obama administration, be trying to find a place for them. I mean, that's part of the problem. It isn't that we're down there, torturing people or whatever. Part of it is they're just sitting there waiting for a place to go.
But some people would say that if you are being held against your will and confined for 7 years, that's torture enough. It doesn't matter if you're being waterboarded or, bamboo shoots up the fingernails or whatever. Just being held and separated from your family, your business, never being charged with a crime, that's torture enough.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got the Uyghurs as one example. And what I have heard from some and from the lady that we're going to hear from in the second segment, Liz Bradley, who's with the Center for Constitutional Rights, is that there's a chance these people might be released in the United States. I mean, this is the horror story that we've been hearing from some Republican congressmen. Well, what are you going to do when you release these people? Are they going to end up living in the United States? Well, some of them might. These Chinese ethnic Muslims, cannot be repatriated because they'll be tortured in China. They don't fit in anywhere else. Where are they going to go? They might end up in the United States of America as American citizens.
I mean, who knows what's going to happen with the legal process? I guess it could be entirely possible. I can't sit here and say what's going to happen to these guys.
Well, Brian, why was it necessary for us to open the facility there in the first place instead of using existing U.S. or federal prisons?
I think one of the reasons they did that was because there had already been some facilities at Guantanamo to handle what they call MIGOPs or migrant operations type stuff from humanitarian missions from like the mid-90s when Haiti kind of exploded politically.
Mm-hmm.
They had a bunch of Haitians that ended up at Gitmo, and a lot of these, for example, Camp X-Ray, the original detainee camp, originally held Haitian bad guys or, you know, suspected bad guys from people that have been caught doing bad things were put in what is now Camp X-Ray, which is no longer used by anybody, by the way.
Where was Camp X-Ray?
Camp X-Ray is on the naval side, the naval station side of the base.
Okay.
But it's now all grown over, and they keep it around to show people that it is no longer used. It was only used by the U.S. for like 6 months for the detainee operations before they could get the other Camp Delta built.
The idea was that these guys were classified as enemy combatants.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess in one fell swoop there, they were able to not make them applicable to the existing rules of the Geneva Convention as applied to prisoners of war, and yet they didn't have to go through the U.S. criminal justice system. They're in limbo.
I think one of the things they were looking at logistically again was there were facilities there to handle them.
Brian Jopek, Staff Sergeant with the Army National Guard. He is with the Public Affairs Office at the prison camp in Guantanamo. If you'd like to call in with your questions or comments, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742, 780-9742. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We'll be back after this.
Wisconsin Public Radio comes from the Independent Living Council of Wisconsin, which allows the public to comment on how programs for people with disabilities can better meet the needs of consumers at its meeting February 9th and 10th in Madison. More information at ilcw.org.
Back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. I'm Glenn Mobrick. Our subject today, the decision to close the prison camp at Guantanamo Bay. Our guest is Staff Sergeant Brian Jopek, who is with the Public Affairs Office at the prison camp. We want to hear from you. 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. Brian, describe a typical cell for a prisoner at Guantanamo.
The cells in Camp 5 and 6, which is what I was telling you off when we were off mic there, is based on the, I think it was either Indiana or Iowa prison facility. Bed, toilet, trying to think what else they have.
About how big is the cell?
I couldn't even tell you. Well, I mean, they're not huge, but they're not like a solitary confinement thing either.
You have a couple of inmates to each cell, or just one inmate
just
to
one.
Each cell? And you were told us in the first half that some abuse of prisoners perhaps had taken place during the early years of
The Bush administration had acknowledged, and that's public knowledge, the Bush administration had acknowledged at some point that early on there might have been some stuff that went on. But from what I've seen and in the years since, nothing like that is going on. Our people down there are the kids on those blocks, those cell blocks, are doing everything they can to make sure that nothing happens to the guard force and the detainees. Like I say, that's the two. Those are the two primary functions.
You have never seen or heard of any inmates who had been tortured or mistreated.
No,
sleep deprivation.
I haven't. No.
Continuous loud noise.
Let me tell you something.
Let me go through the list here. Forced nakedness, extreme cold, short shackling, threatened with dogs. Any of that stuff happening?
No. as a matter of fact, I know they had one situation where the thermostat in the facility was set at, like, I don't know, 72 or something like that, 71 or 72 degrees, and they had one detainee complaining about being cold. And unfortunately, stuff like that gets to the International Red Cross or whatever, or their lawyers. The lawyers like to get out of there and take stuff like that and make it sound like they're all being tortured and that sort of thing.
What about reports of the Quran being abused or destroyed, flushed down toilets?
If anybody's flushing them down the toilet, it's the detainees. Again, our people do everything they can to make sure things like that are not harmed. And I'll tell you, if the camp command or the joint detention group commander finds out that something like that has happened and it's the fault of a guard, that person is punished. They're very cognizant. They try to stay as cognizant as possible of what's going on there. They analyze everything that goes on in the camps in the previous 24 hours at a daily briefing in the morning.
Are there any inmates currently there who are trying to commit suicide or who are on a hunger strike and maybe by not eating they have to be kept alive by being force-fed through a tube?
They have detainees who are enterally fed, which is the politically correct term for tube feed, I guess. Some of them have actually preferred to be fed that way, have told the doctors that they'd rather be fed that way.
That's hard to believe.
Admiral Thomas, the current JTF commander, when he first took over, he was fed that way for a week himself.
Why did he do that? To see what
it was like?
Because
he wanted to see what it was like, sure. I mean, and you're talking about a guy who on 9/11 ran back into the Pentagon to pull people out of a burning building after the plane hit the Pentagon. So he's pretty hardcore, but he wanted it, and this is a one-star.
Why are they being force-fed? Why do they have to be fed through tubes?
Because they, some of them are on, are on hunger strikes and that sort of thing. I mean, that's one of their tactics. But our people are trained to make sure that they don't fall below a certain, what do you want to call it, body fat content or what have you, or weight.
Are these inmates able to see lawyers?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Let's hear from a woman who is working for one legal firm that's representing the inmates at Guantanamo. It's the Center for Constitutional Rights. The woman is Liz Bradley. She grew up in Wausau. In fact, we should probably let you know that she is the daughter of Mark Bradley, who is the president of the UW Regent Board of Directors. Mm-hmm. And we asked Liz specifically what her reaction was to the president's decision to close Guantanamo.
We definitely welcome President Obama's decision to close Guantanamo. After 7 years of indefinite detention of these men, the vast majority of which who have not done anything ever against the United States, it is well overdue and time not only to restore the lives of these men, but also to restore the U.S.'s international reputation.
Liz, you say that the vast majority of them haven't done anything against the United States, but if you listen to the opposition to the decision to close Guantanamo, particularly being voiced by some Republican congressmen, they're saying these men are, by and large, terrorists, and if they are somehow released or no longer kept in a secure facility, it poses a grave national security concern.
That position is very misguided. The men who are in Guantanamo, there's about 245 remaining. There may be about two dozen who actually are continued threats and who are dangerous men. But that doesn't mean that Guantanamo should remain open. these men who are dangerous criminals should be charged, tried in the federal courts, and put in federal prison if need be. And the remainder, almost over 200 people, should be repatriated to their home country or should be found safe third countries where they can be resettled if they cannot safely return home.
How many of the inmates at Guantanamo do you believe are being held even though they are innocent of any charges? Do you have a rough percentage?
Well, only 20 people of the 245 remaining, or the 779 who have been in Guantanamo, have ever been charged. Some of them who are still considered enemy combatants or not cleared for release. If they were ever involved in any hostilities, they were very low-level militants, or mainly they were just caught in the middle of war. Very few of them were captured on the battlefield even. About 4% of the men in Guantanamo were ever captured by U.S. forces on a battlefield. The vast majority were sold for bounty or were just caught in the middle of war.
So what you're saying is we've been holding innocent men for 7 years now without bothering to charge them, without bringing any charges against them?
Yes, we have.
And wouldn't that embitter some of these prisoners? Wouldn't they, if they weren't terrorists before, couldn't an experience like this turn them into terrorists, and might that make them security risks now?
I've heard that argument before, and frankly, I also just find it to be more theory than anything else. The majority of these men who are our clients and who I know the stories of, they are more mentally broken than anything. They are living in despair of being told that they are never again going to see their families. They have been treated, most of them treated very, very horribly. The majority of them are just mentally broken men and need rehabilitation more than anything.
You talk about their treatment. Other critics have said that the interrogation practices and some of the treatment there amount to torture. Is that something that the people at the Center for Constitutional Rights believe?
There definitely have been men in Guantanamo who have been tortured. A press release came out just a couple of weeks ago.
What evidence do you have of that?
The evidence that I don't have necessarily personally, I am not an attorney, and I do not have classified information. So even if I did know, I probably wouldn't be able to talk about it.
But yet you were able to make the statement that you believe that they were tortured. Why do you have that belief?
Well, even recently, a U.S. official, Susan Crawford, the head of the Guantanamo Military Commission, just about a week or two ago, finally confirmed what the world already knew, that the interrogation techniques used on our client, Mohammed Al-Qahtani, which was included isolation and solitary confinement and sleep deprivation and threats of violence, surmounted to torture.
What do you think Guantanamo has done to the United States' reputation abroad?
Probably the most detrimental thing that has happened in the past 8 years for the United States' reputation as a democracy, as having a strong legal system, as having a solid constitution. Guantanamo is the biggest stain our reputation has had from the Bush administration. The fact that we have created an extrajudicial prison on the island of Guantanamo and treated citizens from all over the world in such a horrible manner has really been very detrimental to our reputation. And what has happened to these men obviously is horrible, but we stand by President Obama's stance of charge or release. The men who should be charged in a federal prison and held in a federal prison like every other dangerous person in our country. But the vast majority of them just should be transferred home to their home country or given resettlement or humanitarian protection in a safe third country where they can begin to rebuild their lives.
It's Liz Bradley of the Center for Constitutional Rights. That's an organization providing legal representation to the inmates at Guantanamo. And we have with us on Route 51 Staff Sergeant Brian Jopek, who is with the Public Affairs Office at Guantanamo Bay. If you'd like to join the conversation, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. Brian, at various points, you were shaking your head while
Liz was... I don't think she's ever been to Gitmo. Things as little as detainees complaining about the condition of the lettuce in their salad get addressed. If their salad's if their lettuce is a little too brown, that gets fixed immediately. The Joint Detention Group Commander, Colonel Vargo, is probably one of the brightest officers I've ever met in my life. He's on his people to make sure that even stuff as little as brown lettuce in a detainee's meal is taken care of. I mean, it's amazing the extent they go to.
She brought up Susan Crawford, the convening authority of the military commissions, and she said the way one inmate, Muhammad al-Qahtani, was treated amounted to torture, not so much because of individual techniques, but all of them together. And now we may not be able to use that evidence against him to prosecute him because presumably it was coerced through abusive techniques. Why would this Susan Crawford, the head of the military commission, say that happened?
I don't know. I haven't seen that press release. I really can't comment on that. I wasn't aware that she had issued that.
How do you react to those who say, as Liz Bradley just said, that Guantanamo has been a stain on America's reputation?
Well, I think it has. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that the detainee operation there, because of, like I said, because of some of the stuff that may have that went on earlier or whatever, has continued to stick with people. I don't think there's any doubt about it all. Never mind the fact that we are holding thousands of detainees in Iraq and Afghanistan. Gitmo, you know, the spotlight is on Gitmo as far as this type of stuff is concerned. And that's been one of the reasons that our people down there, like I said, are doing everything they can to make sure that nothing happens to these people. I mean, if they do try a self-harm attempt, they are monitored. There are people sent into the cell right away to make sure that that doesn't happen. I mean, that is one of the primary goals of that force down there, is to make sure that these people do not hurt themselves.
Staff Sergeant Brian Jopek, we're going to be back and listen to a different point of view, that of former Vice President Dick Cheney, right after this.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
Those phone numbers again, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. We're talking to Staff Sergeant Brian Jopek of the Public Affairs Division at Guantanamo Bay about the decision to close Guantanamo. One person who is critical of that decision is the former Vice President, Dick Cheney.
Did you authorize the tactics that were used against Khalid Sheikh Mohammed?
I was aware of the program, certainly, and involved in helping get the process cleared. That is, the agency, in effect, came in and wanted to know what they could and couldn't do. And they talked to me as well as others to explain what they wanted to do, and I supported it. There was a period of time there, 3 or 4 years ago, when about half of everything we knew about al-Qaeda came from that one source. So it's been a remarkably successful effort. I think the results speak for themselves.
In hindsight, do you think any of those tactics that were used against Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and others went too far?
I don't.
And on KSM, one of those tactics, of course, widely reported was waterboarding, and that seems to be a tactic we no longer use. Even that, you think, was appropriate?
I do.
Well, I think in some respects, the biggest threat hasn't changed. The biggest threat has been since before 9/11. It has been that you get a 9/11 type event where the terrorists are armed with something much more dangerous than an airline ticket and a box cutter. You know, they're equipped with a nuclear weapon or a biological agent of some kind. That's the ultimate threat. That's the one that would involve the deaths of perhaps hundreds of thousands of people. I think there's a high probability of such an attempt. When we get people who are more concerned about the, let me think carefully how I describe this, but more concerned with reading the rights to an al-Qaeda terrorist than they are with protecting the United States against people who are absolutely committed to do everything they can to kill Americans, then I worry.
That's former Vice President Dick Cheney. The last comment you heard was recorded just yesterday. The first one, an interview in mid-December with ABC's Peter Carl. in which he said that he authorized waterboarding. Staff Sergeant Brian Jopek, do you consider waterboarding to be torture?
I don't know. I've never experienced it. I've never taken part in it.
But it's true that the United States government at one time considered it to be torture. During World War II, we prosecuted top Japanese generals and accused them of war crimes for doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Why the change?
Don't know. Glenn, I really don't know. I don't know what to tell you on that.
One of the things that Mr. Cheney said is that some of the things that we did over the past 8 years were necessary in order to protect the national security of America. That last line about members of the Obama administration being more interested in reading al-Qaeda prisoners their rights than protecting America's national security. That's been a justification for a lot of things. Do you worry now that Guantanamo is being closed that our national security might be at risk in some ways?
Well, I think they've got, and I guess you're going to have some people that will disagree with it, like Liz Bradley and others, that other attorneys, what have you, connected with the defense of the detainees. There have been documented incidents. There was the former Gitmo detainee a couple of months ago who performed a suicide attack. They've got a 15 to 20% return rate on Gitmo detainees who have been 15 to 20% incident rate where they've been involved or suspected of being involved in terrorist activities since they've been released from Guantanamo Bay.
Those statistics are being disputed.
No, I'm sure they are. Sure. I'm sure they are being disputed.
On both sides. But there is a conceivably a danger when you release people who have been held for 7 years and swept up in a war on terror that maybe we're going to be releasing some bad apples.
I guess I can't disagree with that to a certain extent. I mean, Colonel Vargo, the JDG commander, again, he in an interview that he did, he said a lot of these guys, we didn't just pick them up at Walmart. So that would, I mean, obviously there's going to be disagreement over the level of involvement a lot of these guys had with whatever incidents.
And the argument is being made that even if they are dangerous, we can prosecute them in federal courts the same way we prosecuted domestic terrorists like Timothy McVeigh, mm-hmm. who blew up the federal building
in
Oklahoma.
Yeah, that's one of the debates going on.
Now, one of the things, waterboarding is not in the Army Field Manual.
No.
And yet, you know, as a military man, is it troubling that there were apparently no clear set rules or guidelines for interrogations in Guantanamo? If you told people they had to follow a set of rules or an Army field manual, that's clear cut. And soldiers need clear cut rules, mm-hmm. don't they? They're
sure.
not supposed to be making it up on the spot.
Sure. And I don't know who, I don't know who is involved in those incidents that have been referred to. I don't know that it was Army personnel or Navy personnel. I don't know who was involved.
Could have been
there.
The CIA. Could have been someone else.
I don't know who it was.
But in the field manual, isn't there a golden rule, basically the idea you don't use any procedure on an enemy soldier that you wouldn't want used on an American soldier?
Right. I would think so. I mean, you wouldn't want your people going through that.
Do you think in some ways the changes that are going on right now might be providing more guidance for Army personnel who are in situations like this? At
sure.
Least they'll know what they can and can't do?
Sure. I think you've got a new president's come in and said this is the way it's going to be. And he's pretty much made no bones about it, that it's going to be a whole new ball game from this point on, at least on his watch.
And the argument that's been made is that the best weapon America has in the war on terror is our ideals,
mm-hmm.
our morals, the foundation of this country,
sure.
our Bill of Rights, our Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe by adhering more strictly to that, it'll be a good thing for our national security.
I hope so. We'll see.
Brian, what, if anything, have you learned from Guantanamo in the short time that you've been there?
Well, personally, of course, you work with a lot of Navy personnel. This is the first time I've ever worked with active duty Navy and or Navy Reserve people. That alone has taken quite a bit of getting used to the Navy culture, as they've had to get used to the way the Army does mm-hmm. things as far as personnel and administrative type things.
And what do you hope America has learned from this experience?
Well, I would hope that we can avoid, you want to call it the mess again in the future. Okay, because it is, regardless of your position on it, it is kind of messy.
Well put. Staff Sergeant Brian Jopek of the Army National Guard. Brian, thanks for being here for the past hour. We asked you some tough questions.
Yeah. And, no problem.
Have a safe flight back tomorrow.
Appreciate it, Glenn.
We want to thank Staff Sergeant Brian Jopek, and thank also our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Kelson Quisler. Thanks, as always, to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Next Thursday on Route 51, we look at the continuing problem of drunk driving in Wisconsin and the effort in the state legislature to pass new laws toughening the penalties for drunk driving offenders. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for riding with us on Route 51 again today. Until next week, we're heading out of town.